So, welcome everyone. I think many of us know each other, and it's just joyful to look around the room and see how sweet it is. This evening, I also wanted to continue with Rabia, the wonderful mystic that I was speaking of last week. And for anybody who does not know her background, I'll just give you a little short rendering here. She lived between 717 and 801, and she is without a doubt the most popular and influential of the female Islamic saints and a central figure in the Sufi tradition. She was born nearly 500 years before Rumi, and although it has rarely been said, she was perhaps more than any other poet influencing in his writing. I am always holding a priceless vase in my hands. If you asked me about the deeper truths of the path, I told you the answers. And it would be like handing you sacred relics. But most have their hands tied behind their back. That is, most are not free of events that their eyes have seen, their ears have heard, their bodies have felt. Most cannot focus their abilities in the present and might drop what I say. So I'll wait. I don't mind waiting until your love for all makes luminous the now. It acts like love, music. It reaches toward the face, touches it, and tries to let you know God's promise that all will be okay. It acts like love, music, and tells the feet, you do not have to be so burdened. My body is covered with wounds, this world made, but still I longed to kiss God, even when God said, could you also kiss the hand that caused each scar? For until then, you cannot come unto me. But when you do, this is what it is. It is music. It helps us to forgive. And one more. She's so delicious. And this is Saint Francis of Assisi, which I believe all of us know. God came to my house and asked for charity. I fell on my knees and cried, beloved, what may I give you? Just love. He said, just love. This is Love Poems from God, and it is Daniel Ladinsky is the fellow who compiled all of these, and he has men and women over the centuries who have been mystics and who have written. And many of these mystics, the only place that they could find refuge in order to be who they really were was within a religious setting. And so often their lives were about service through that focus. And many of their writings, because many of them were considered heretics during their time, because they were speaking about love. And you are love, and I am love, and here is love. And many of these religions were very strict and didn't really have a place for mystics. And their works were, upon their death, many of their works were destroyed, and even during their lifetime. And so many of the poems that are in this collection are those that are still or were recovered many, many years later by people who realized here was someone with great ability and who wrote so beautifully and spoke so beautifully. And often they were not necessarily secret writings, but they were not writings that were given from the pulpit, let's put it that way. These were the outpourings of their mystical energy and their deep love for the divine. And they had to transcend what were the limitations of their time, the limitations of what their society was about, and often the safe place for them would be where they were. Now, you take St. John of the Cross. I'll be reading some of his things. He was imprisoned for years and tortured. It was just horrific. And eventually he was released. And he was very fragile and eventually died, but wrote very beautiful things. Many of these men and women, they're so extraordinary. And of course, their energy not only lives on through these poems, but each one of us sitting in this room, we are holding, even though we may not acknowledge it, we're holding a sacred place here in this room. We're holding a sacred place wherever we go in our life. I mean, when we go to the grocery store, it just looks like the grocery store, darlings, but it is a sacred place. You make it sacred by coming into this. As Rumi said, and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, wherever you are, be the soul of that place. And the moment you arrive, knowing that you are the soul of that place, that is a sacred place. And you bring that sacredness and that love which you are to every place that you are. I mean, I'm going to be taking my dog Elkie to the vet tomorrow, and I can hardly wait because I love to go and be with those individuals who love animals so much that they have taken years of training to be able to be with these beloved animals and to share that love and to know that that is a sacred place. It's a sacred place. I happen to love food, so going to the grocery store, it's not my most favorite place to go, but it is one of my favorite places to go. And I honor that in our lives, I mean, I love to get my car filled up with gas because whoever is at the little gas station that I go to, you know, I'll say, wow, isn't this a beautiful day? And without pause, they all say, yes, it's a beautiful day. And I think, okay, everybody here knows what they're doing and doing it with love. They may not call it love. They may call it duty or doing a good job or whatever. But it's still sacred. The energy is still so beautiful. So I look at the places I go in my life and how honored I am that I can be there with the beloved. They don't even know they're the beloved. But if we see them as the beloved, their soul knows in that instant exactly what that is. And when they say the eyes are the window to the soul, and if we meet anybody, with that intention, with that level of love, then their soul is fully responsive. Even if, as I say, the costume they're wearing this time doesn't look very responsive, it doesn't make any difference. We're the ones who are bringing the soul which we are every place where we are. Albert Einstein said, you can live as if there are no miracles, or you can live as if everything is a miracle. It's all about the intention that we have in every moment. And if our intention is that there is love and we are love and we bring that love, then how can it not be a miracle? I mean, when was the last time it wasn't a miracle? I mean, I get up in the morning and I look out and, well, I don't care if the fog is in or the sun is shining. I go, it's a miracle and we need to turn this heat down, because I'm frying over here. Maybe we need to open the door, sweetheart, or something. Sorry. I mean, I'm cranking the energy, but, you know, it's a double whammy. Do you think we could open the door, teams?
The thing's a stump drawer.
You have to do that, I think, with the black. You have to turn the black there. That should eventually do something. Okay. Let's see what happens.
You are our heater.
Yeah, I am the heater. Do you want to just put the chair there? And if you put the chair there, then I think we'll be okay. She said. Okay, yeah, we can do this.
You're over there,
Rusty. Oh, beautiful. And usually I'm the cold person.
Me too.
I'm always the cold person. Okay, so here we are. So when we look at our lives and we say, what is the nature of a miracle? And it is something that is outside what we would describe as normal. Okay? So you look at your life and you say, well, this is normal for me, and if it's outside that, it could actually be a miracle. And if it's a miracle, then something else will happen. Well, if we wake up in the morning and we feel that the day is going to be a miraculous day, it's already begun, has it not? And if we wake up in the morning and we say, in this day, I will only meet the divine, that's a miracle. If I say, I wake up in this day, and the soul which I am will be present with every person that I am with, that too can be a miracle. And for many people, they don't even know what it is to be fully recognized by the other. Do you know what I'm saying? Even if you don't know their name, their background, you know nothing about them, but if you're fully present with them, that is such a gift. And often we forget. You know, we just go through our day and we, you know, go to the cash register and we don't even look at the person, much less really see them, know them for who they are. And I honor that in a process of awakening, whatever that path is, whatever it looks like for you, maybe you just say, I'm not on a path, I'm just being who I am, doesn't make any difference. If you are fully present with who you are in every moment, then of course, wonderful things are going to happen in your life. And I do not know what tomorrow will hold. I have no idea. And I used to, because I had grown up with a family that, you know, we had our schedule and it went from dawn till dusk. Did anybody grow up with that? I certainly did. So I didn't have any time during the day in which I could even take a breath. You know, it was like ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. And that meant you were a good child and you had to have accomplished something by the end of the day. Yes? And several things. And when you sat at the dinner table, everyone went around and told what they had accomplished in that day. And so it wasn't about, well, what happened in school today? It was, what did you accomplish? Yipes! So, you know, it was like you always had to have that sense of accomplishment. Then when I began to have a deep prayer life, and that prayer life was not about accomplishing anything, and I would pray different prayers, whatever would come to me, and I couldn't wait for the prayer time at night because that was when something else happened that was so sweet and so beautiful. And I began praying, as you all know, my first little prayer. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray my Lord, pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Then when I was a little bit older and I learned the Lord's Prayer. And then when I got a little bit older, I realized I could make my own prayers. Oh, that was so exciting. I said, oh boy, you know, now I can pray for the dog, and I can pray for the sky, and I can pray for the flowers. And, you know, it was so liberating to know that, I was very diligent. I did my prayers, you know, when you're in Sunday school, how they say, now hear your prayers, and you have to say your prayers. You know, and I said, okay, I'm really good at that. But then, to just open to this wide vista of what prayer really was for me, which was a process of speaking my love, was it not? And speaking my love to whatever came into my heart to speak about. I mean, I can remember going to the fair, and the first time I ever rode the merry-go-round, it was just thrilling. And I was on this horse, and the horse was going up and down, and the music was going, and we were going round and round, and I just thought, oh, this is heaven. And then I got to eat popcorn for the first time ever in my whole life. And you think that didn't change my life forever? Yes. And I was able to just say my prayers because no one was listening. Thank you for the popcorn. It's really, really good. Thank you for the merry-go-round. It's really wonderful. I mean, the things that touch our hearts, it's different for everyone. But at the end of the day, to be able to give such deep thanks for even the things that the moment before we may have said, I don't know about that. But in truth, it's all right there in front of us. And each day, even though you say, in this day, I'm going to do this, 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 and this, in between those moments, There are the unexpected things, which are, for me, those little miracles. And often, where we live, we can look out and see the cloud formations change, and the light changes. Everything changes, moment to moment. And to be aware of that, and to be part of the beauty of that, I mean, to me, that's a miracle. That is a miracle. And then, what happens within our feeling body, our emotional body, the myriad of feelings that we have, and often I was told, you know, children are seen but not heard. If you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. Are any of these familiar to anyone except me? Yes, thank you. Et cetera, et cetera. Lots of rules and regulations. So I learned to be the silent child. And guess what? When I finally found my voice, I said, I will never be silent again. But I have to find something good to talk about. So it just so happens that the divine said, speak, and the energy will come through you. Speak, and that truth will be revealed. And I said, I'm willing to do that. So I understand in the deepest part of myself the truth of when we are fully awake and fully enlivened by who and what we are, there isn't a moment where we say, this isn't it. That's the moment I say, this is when you really want to show up. Right here, right now, this is when you really want to show up. And I've had to build my spiritual muscle to be able to do that, because I grew up having a lot of judgment around me and given to me. And so I was told, not here. Oh, there's all right, but not over here. Or this is okay, but that's not okay. And they were like laws of my family. And all of us in this room were given certain laws, weren't we? Some very subtle, some very strong. And when I went to New York and met all the people that I've met in New York, the great boiling pot of people in New York, and I realized that a lot of those laws didn't really support me any longer. And so I said, can I break these laws? I mean, it was scary at first. I thought, you know, these are the laws of the family. And I thought, yes, I do believe I can. And the first time I ever broke one of these laws, I really got nervous. I thought, what if one of the friends of my family comes along and sees that I've broken this law? Oh my gosh, and then they get back to my mom and dad. I mean, you know that whole scenario. Oh my goodness. And then I said, so what? It's perfectly all right to break those laws and find your own way. What is the way that we each have found our way? And we have been true to that way. And if that way needed to change in some particular way of doing or being or whatever it looked like, we have come to that place. And that level of flexibility is profound and serves us so well in the lives we now have. And my brothers and sisters, I bless them and I love them, and they have chosen a really powerful line of energy that is in our family, and I acknowledge that. And from time to time, I see that they're kind of, you know, little things that are happening over here and over there, you know, and it makes me very happy because I see that they too have said, oh, maybe I could just kind of move over here instead of making it a straight line. Maybe I could just raise the vibration a little bit, or take this in a different way, or move and have my life look a little bit different than everybody else around me. And I acknowledge that in the process of truly waking up, being awake, what we're doing is opening our hearts and saying, whatever the divine brings unto us, we will meet it with love. That's as simple as I can put it. And when people say waking up is hard work, I say, could be. I've certainly known the hard work part, because the divine has brought me things and said, this too. Can you love this too? And I've had to say in my heart of hearts, please show me how to love this. Show me how to love this. Because I was not raised knowing how to love this. And so I had to learn how to love without having anything that would keep it from being less than. So, in my heart, I know that the capacity to love is limitless. In the right side of my brain, I know the capacity to think love, experience love, feel love is very profound. And I also realize on the left side of my brain, I have this ego that says, what do you think you're doing? It's got to look like this. Why are you doing it that way? It's this way. And I have to have a discussion. There are moments where I have to have a discussion, and I have to say, actually, I want to try this way. Well, you know what will happen if you try it that way. And then I get this whole thing of all the worst end scenarios that could possibly happen if I do it that way. And then I go, well, then I'll have to experience that. But the desire within me to grow, to expand my consciousness beyond any limitations. In esoteric teachings, they call it the ring pass knot. Wow! The first time I learned that, here's the ring pass knot, and we do not go beyond that, you know. And I'm with a group of people who all have that belief. And so I went, you know, it's kind of scary. And so they would say, in this level of consciousness, this is the ring pass knot. And this is the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- they were a little bit, they said, you know, you shouldn't be so in your physical body because you're doing this expanded work. And I said, well, actually, my belief is that I need to be fully in my physical body. I mean, really in my physical body so that I can expand the energy more and more and more, and my feet are on the ground and I'm really here with the energy. And they said, well, here's this ring passed on. And I said, oh boy, I do not know if this is going to work for me. And eventually it didn't. I left. I said, the old teachings about limitation had been there because, in truth, I've had many embodiments, and I'm sure you all have too, where I was burned at the stake for going beyond the ring past night. Had my eyes gouged out, had a tongue cut. I had a lot of horrific things happen. And it was always because I went beyond the ring past night. And early in this embodiment, I'm so grateful to a psychic who gave me a reading. It was the first reading I ever had. And she said, I want you to know that you have been tortured, you have gone through these most horrific embodiments, and you're back again. And she said, but in this embodiment, you will not be tortured, and nothing bad is going to happen to you. And you have to just go and do what that is that you have come to do. And she said, do not let anything stand in your way. So one of the reasons that the divine brought me into this group that had the ring pass not was so that I would make a choice to go beyond even that place which before had caused so much pain in so many embodiments, to go beyond that and say, I will go beyond the ring pass not. And many of us who have had embodiments like that, or even in this present embodiment, I came into a family that had an extraordinary series of ring pass nots. Very powerful, very powerful. And they were, you know, you would call them the laws of the family. And that was to help me learn the discipline, and I needed that discipline of, here's a task, let it be done. Here is a way of thinking that will allow you to grow to a certain extent, but then when you're ready, perhaps you can go beyond that. And all the different levels of energy that I received in my childhood were opportunities when I matured enough to say, here's a ring past not, and I will go beyond that ring. And then going beyond it to find I was in territory that I didn't have a clue. And that in itself was very scary, but I said, I'd rather be on the outside of the ring past not and have to sort of maybe wander my way around a bit, you know, kind of find out what it is that's beyond that ring. And if it doesn't suit me, honey, I can get back in that ring any old time I want to. And I can say, here, that this is a limitation, all right? Or I can say, wait a minute, this is becoming easier. This is becoming more like who I really am. Yes, I will continue. give you one example, and it's very earth plane, and you're going to laugh. So I'm in New York, and it's the 60s, and we all have long hair, and we're all, you know, love children, and it's great. And Hair was, you know, the big musical, and we were all dancing naked from one time or another, and we're just having a gay old time. And I was, you know, wearing clothing that I thought was very appropriate for the times. My family lives in Atlanta, Georgia. I go home my first Christmas, and I get off the plane, and, you know, and I have a coat on, can't see what I've really got on. I go home, and my mom, take my coat off, and my mom said, "You're not going to wear that while you're here, are you?" And I said, "Well, Mom," and this was a very, very powerful moment. I said, "Yes, I am." And her thought was, and I could see it written all over her, "What will my friends think about Mary?" That was the first thought. And little by little, she got used to it, but, you know, I had some really quite wonderful, outlandish things. And finally she would say, "Mary, I'm sorry, you just cannot wear that tonight. We're going out to dinner with the so-and-sos." And I'd go, "Actually, Mom, I think I need to wear this when we go out to dinner with the so-and-sos," whatever it was. But that was just one little ring past knot that I had to encounter. The biggest one that I had, and I share it with you because it was, I believe all of us have had the same kind of energies go on in our lives, where we've been encountered in such a way that we know we have to shift a paradigm, a teaching that has come to us which is no longer appropriate, and the teaching was in my family. I was in a group in Atlanta, Georgia, and I was given an award for being an outstanding teenager, and it was to take a trip to Washington, D.C. And I went, "Oh, this is going to be fantastic. I just can't wait." So I got on the train, and, you know, all these young teenagers who had been chosen from the city of Atlanta were all going to go there together. And so we did, and we had a marvelous time. And we came back, and I got off the train, and there was no one there to meet me. And I went, "Oh, this is very curious. I thought my parents would be here." So I said goodbye to my friends, and I got a taxi, and I went home, and there wasn't anybody to greet me at the door. And I went in, and my father said, "Come into my study." I went, "Ooh." Went into his study, and he said, "You do realize that you were traveling with Negro girls?" I said, "Yes." And he said, "Do you realize that I could be fired from my job if anyone realized that you had been traveling with Negroes?" And I said, and remember, this is in the 50s now, I went, "No, Dad, I didn't realize that." And I said, "And these girls are my friends. We have made friends." He said, "You may never see them. You may never be in public with them as long as you are in this house." And I went, "Whoa." I understood where that came from, but it was very painful. So, welcome everyone. I think many of us know each other, and it's just joyful to look around the room and see how sweet it is. This evening I also wanted to continue with Rabia, the wonderful mystic that I was speaking of last week. And for anybody who does not know her background, I'll just give you a little short rendering here. She lived between 717 and 801, and she is without a doubt the most popular and influential of the female Islamic saints and a central figure in the Sufi tradition. She was born nearly 500 years before Rumi, and although it has rarely been said, she was perhaps more than any other poet influencing in his writing. "I am always holding a priceless vase in my hands. If you asked me about the deeper truths of the path, I told you the answers. And it would be like handing you sacred relics. But most have their hands tied behind their back. That is, most are not free of events that their eyes have seen, their ears have heard, their bodies have felt. Most cannot focus their abilities in the present and might drop what I say. So I'll wait. I don't mind waiting until your love for all makes luminous the now. It acts like love, music. It reaches toward the face, touches it, and tries to let you know God's promise that all will be okay. It acts like love, music, and tells the feet, you do not have to be so burdened. My body is covered with wounds this world made, but still I longed to kiss God, even when God said, could you also kiss the hand that caused each scar? For until then, you cannot come unto me. But when you do, this is what it is. It is music. It helps us to forgive. And one more. She's so delicious. And this is St. Francis of Assisi, which I believe all of us know. God came to my house and asked for charity. I fell on my knees and cried, Beloved, what may I give you? Just love. He said, just love. This is Love Poems from God, and it is Daniel Ladinsky is the fellow who compiled all of these. And he has men and women over the centuries who have been mystics and who have written. And many of these mystics, the only place that they could find refuge in order to be who they really were was within a religious setting. And so often their lives were about service through that focus. And many of their writings, because many of them were considered heretics during their time, because they were speaking about love, and you are love, and I am love, and here is love. And many of these religions were very strict and didn't really have a place for mystics. And their works were, upon their death, many of their works were destroyed, and even during their lifetime. And so many of the poems that are in this collection are those that are still or were recovered many, many years later by people who realized here was someone with great ability and who wrote so beautifully and spoke so beautifully. And often they were not necessarily secret writings, but they were not writings that were given from the pulpit. Let's put it that way. These were the outpourings of their mystical energy and their deep love for the divine. And they had to transcend what were the limitations of their time, the limitations of what their society was about, and often the safe place for them would be where they were. Now, you take St. John of the Cross, I'll be reading some of his things. He was imprisoned for years and tortured. It was just horrific. And eventually he was released, and he was very fragile and eventually died, but wrote very beautiful things. Many of these men and women, they're so extraordinary, and of course their energy not only lives on through these poems, but each one of us sitting in this room, we are holding, even though we may not acknowledge it, we're holding a sacred place here in this room. We're holding a sacred place wherever we go in our life. I mean, when we go to the grocery store, it just looks like the grocery store, darlings, but it is a sacred place. You make it sacred by coming into this. As Rumi said, and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, wherever you are, be the soul of that place. And the moment you arrive, knowing that you are the soul of that place, that is a sacred place. And you bring that sacredness and that love which you are to every place that you are. I mean, I'm going to be taking my dog Elkie to the vet tomorrow, and I can hardly wait because I love to go and be with those individuals who love animals so much that they have taken years of training to be able to be with these beloved animals and to share that love and to know that that is a sacred place. It's a sacred place. I happen to love food, so going to the grocery store, it's not my most favorite place to go, but it is one of my favorite places to go. And I honor that in our lives, I mean, I love to get my car filled up with gas because whoever is at the little gas station that I go to, you know, I'll say, wow, isn't this a beautiful day? And without pause, they all say, yes, it's a beautiful day. And I think, okay, everybody here knows what they're doing and doing it with love. They may not call it love. They may call it duty or doing a good job or whatever, but it's still sacred. The energy is still so beautiful. So I look at the places I go in my life and how honored I am that I can be there with the beloved. They don't even know they're the beloved. But if we see them as the beloved, their soul knows in that instant exactly what that is. And when they say the eyes are the window to the soul, and if we meet anybody, with that intention, with that level of love, then their soul is fully responsive. Even if, as I say, the costume they're wearing this time doesn't look very responsive, it doesn't make any difference. We're the ones who are bringing the soul which we are every place where we are. Albert Einstein said, "You can live as if there are no miracles, or you can live as if everything is a miracle." It's all about the intention that we have in every moment. And if our intention is that there is love and we are love and we bring that love, then how can it not be a miracle? I mean, when was the last time it wasn't a miracle? I mean, I get up in the morning and I look out and, well, I don't care if the fog is in or the sun is shining. I go, it's a miracle and we need to turn this heat down, because I'm frying over here. Maybe we need to turn open the door, sweetheart, or something. Sorry. I mean, I'm cranking the energy, but, you know, it's a double whammy. Do you think we could open the door, team?
The thing's a stump drawer.
You have to do that, I think, with the black. You have to turn the black there. That should eventually do something. Okay. Let's see what happens.
You are our heater.
Yeah, I am the heater.
Yeah.
Do you want to just put the chair there? And if it, yeah. If you put the chair there, then I think we'll be okay. She said.
She got it.
Okay, yeah, we can do this.
You're over there,
Rusty. Oh, beautiful. And usually I'm the cold person.
Me too.
I'm always the cold person. Okay, so here we are. So when we look at our lives and we say, what is the nature of a miracle? And it is something that is outside what we would describe as normal. Okay? So you look at your life and you say, well, this is normal for me, and if it's outside that, it could actually be a miracle. And if it's a miracle, then something else will happen. Well, if we wake up in the morning and we feel that the day is going to be a miraculous day, it's already begun, has it not? And if we wake up in the morning and we say, in this day, I will only meet the divine, that's a miracle. If I say, I wake up in this day, and the soul which I am will be present with every person that I am with, that too can be a miracle. And for many people, they don't even know what it is to be fully recognized by the other. Do you know what I'm saying? To even if you don't know their name, their background, you know nothing about them, but if you're fully present with them, that is such a gift. And often we forget. You know, we just go through our day and we, you know, go to the cash register and we, you know, and we don't even look at the person, much less really see them, know them for who they are. And I honor that in a process of awakening, whatever that path is, whatever it looks like for you, maybe you just say, I'm not on a path, I'm just being who I am, doesn't make any difference. If you are fully present with who you are in every moment, then of course, wonderful things are going to happen in your life. And I do not know what tomorrow will hold. I have no idea. And I used to, because I had grown up with a family that, you know, we had our schedule and it went from dawn till dusk. Did anybody grow up with that? I certainly did. So I didn't have any time during the day in which I could even take a breath. You know, it was like ta 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 ta. And that meant you were a good child and you had to have accomplished something by the end of the day. Yes? And several things. And when you sat at the dinner table, everyone went around and told how what they had accomplished in that day. And so it wasn't about, well, what happened in school today? It was, what did you accomplish? Yipes! So, you know, it was like you always had to have that sense of accomplishment. Then when I began to have a deep prayer life, and that prayer life was not about accomplishing anything, and I would pray different prayers, whatever would come to me, and I couldn't wait for the prayer time at night, because that was when something else happened that was so sweet and so beautiful. And I began praying, as you all know, my first little prayer. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray my Lord, pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Then when I was a little bit older and I learned the Lord's Prayer. And then when I got a little bit older, I realized I could make my own prayers. Oh, that was so exciting. I said, oh boy, you know, now I can pray for the dog, I can pray for the sky, and I can pray for the flowers, and you know, it was so liberating to know that. And I was very diligent. I did my prayers, you know, when you're in Sunday school, how they say, now hear your prayers, and you have to say your prayers, you know. And I said, okay, I'm really good at that. But then to just open to this wide vista of what prayer really was for me, which was a process of speaking my love, was it not? And speaking my love to whatever came into my heart to speak about. I mean, I can remember going to the fair, and the first time I ever rode the merry-go-round, it was just thrilling. And I was on this horse, and the horse was going up and down, and the music was going, and we were going round and round, and I just thought, oh, this is heaven. And then I got to eat popcorn for the first time ever in my whole life. And you think that did change my life forever? Yes. And I was able to just say my prayers because no one was listening. Thank you for the popcorn. It's really, really good. And thank you for the merry-go-round. It was really wonderful. I mean, the things that touch our hearts, it's different for everyone. But at the end of the day, to be able to give such deep thanks for even the things that the moment before we may have said, I don't know about that. But in truth, it's all right there in front of us. And each day, even though you say, in this day, I'm going to do this, 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 and this, in between those moments, there are the unexpected things, which are, for me, those little miracles. And often, where we live, we can look out and see the cloud formations change, and the light changes. Everything changes, moment to moment. And to be aware of that and to be part of the beauty of that, I mean, to me, that's a miracle. That is a miracle. And then what happens within our feeling body, our emotional body, the myriad of feelings that we have, and often I was told, you know, children are seen but not heard. If you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. Are any of these familiar to anyone except me? Yes, thank you, et cetera, et cetera. Lots of rules and regulations. So I learned to be the silent child. And guess what? When I finally found my voice, I said, I will never be silent again. But I have to find something good to talk about. So it just so happens that the divine said, speak, and the energy will come through you. Speak, and that truth will be revealed. And I said, I'm willing to do that. So I understand in the deepest part of myself the truth of when we are fully awake and fully enlivened by who and what we are, there isn't a moment where we say, this isn't it. That's the moment I say, this is when you really want to show up. Right here, right now, this is when you really want to show up. And I've had to build my spiritual muscle to be able to do that, because I grew up having a lot of judgment around me and given to me. And so I was told, not here. Oh, there's all right, but not over here. Or this is okay, but that's not okay. And they were like laws of my family. And all of us in this room were given certain laws, weren't we? Some very subtle, some very strong. And when I went to New York and met all the people that I met in New York, the great boiling pot of people in New York, and I realized that a lot of those laws didn't really support me any longer. And so I said, can I break these laws? I mean, it was scary at first. I thought, you know, these are the laws of the family. And I thought, yes, I do believe I can. And the first time I ever broke one of these laws, I really got nervous. I thought, what if one of the friends of my family comes along and sees that I've broken this law? Oh my gosh, and then they get back to my mom and dad. I mean, you know that whole scenario? Oh my goodness. And then I said, so what? It's perfectly all right to break those laws and find your own way. What is the way that we each have found our way? And we have been true to that way. And if that way needed to change in some particular way of doing or being or whatever it looked like, we have come to that place. And that level of flexibility is profound and serves us so well in the lives we now have. And my brothers and sisters, I bless them and I love them, and they have chosen a really powerful line of energy that is in our family, and I acknowledge that. And from time to time, I see that they're kind of, you know, little things that are happening over here and over there, you know, and it makes me very happy because I see that they too have said, oh, maybe I could just kind of move over here instead of making it a straight line. Maybe I could just raise the vibration a little bit, or take this in a different way, or move and have my life look a little bit different than everybody else around me. And I acknowledge that in the process of truly waking up, being awake, what we're doing is opening our hearts and saying, whatever the divine brings unto us, we will meet it with love. That's as simple as I can put it. And when people say waking up is hard work, I say, could be. I've certainly known the hard work part, because the divine has brought me things and said, this too. Can you love this too? And I've had to say in my heart of hearts, please show me how to love this. Show me how to love this. Because I was not raised knowing how to love this. And so I had to learn how to love without having anything that would keep it from being less than. So, in my heart, I know that the capacity to love is limitless. In the right side of my brain, I know the capacity to think love, experience love, feel love is very profound. And I also realize on the left side of my brain, I have this ego that says, what do you think you're doing? It's got to look like this. Why are you doing it that way? It's this way. And I have to have a discussion. There are moments where I have to have a discussion, and I have to say, actually, I want to try this way. Well, you know what will happen if you try it that way. And then I get this whole thing of all the worst-end scenarios that could possibly happen if I do it that way. And then I go, well, then I'll have to experience that. But the desire within me to grow, to expand my consciousness beyond any limitations. In esoteric teachings, they call it the ring pass knot. Wow! The first time I learned that, here's the ring pass knot, and we do not go beyond that, you know. And I'm with a group of people who all have that belief. And so I went, you know, it's kind of scary. And so they would say, in this level of consciousness, this is the ring pass knot. And this is the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- they were a little bit, they said, you know, you shouldn't be so in your physical body because you're doing this expanded work. And I said, well, actually, my belief is that I need to be fully in my physical body. I mean, really in my physical body so that I can expand the energy more and more and more, and my feet are on the ground and I'm really here with the energy. And they said, well, here's this ring passed on. And I said, oh boy, I do not know if this is going to work for me. And eventually, it didn't. I left. I said, the old teachings about limitation had been there because, in truth, I've had many embodiments, and I'm sure you all have too, where I was burned at the stake for going beyond the ring passed on. Had my eyes gouged out, had a tongue cut. I had a lot of horrific things happen. And it was always because I went beyond the ring past not. And early in this embodiment, I'm so grateful to a psychic who gave me a reading. It was the first reading I ever had. And she said, I want you to know that you have been tortured, you have gone through these most horrific embodiments, and you're back again. And she said, but in this embodiment, you will not be tortured, and nothing bad is going to happen to you. And you have to just go and do what that is that you have come to do. And she said, do not let anything stand in your way. So one of the reasons that the divine brought me into this group that had the ring pass not was so that I would make a choice to go beyond even that place which before had caused so much pain in so many embodiments, to go beyond that and say, I will go beyond the ring pass not. And many of us who have had embodiments like that, or even in this present embodiment, I came into a family that had an extraordinary series of ring pass nots. Very powerful, very powerful. And they were, you know, you would call them the laws of the family. And that was to help me learn the discipline, and I needed that discipline of, here's a task, let it be done. Here is a way of thinking that will allow you to grow to a certain extent, but then when you're ready, perhaps you can go beyond that. And all the different levels of energy that I received in my childhood were opportunities when I matured enough to say, here's a ring past not. And I will go beyond that ring. And then going beyond it to find I was in territory that I didn't have a clue. And that in itself was very scary. But I said, I'd rather be on the outside of the ring pass not and have to sort of maybe wander my way around a bit, you know, kind of find out what it is that's beyond that ring. And if it doesn't suit me, honey, I can get back in that ring any old time I want to. And I can say, here, that this is a limitation, all right? Or I can say, wait a minute, this is becoming easier. This is becoming more like who I really am. Yes, I will continue. Give you one example, and it's very earth plane, and you're going to laugh. So I'm in New York, and it's the 60s, and we all have long hair, and we're all, you know, love children, and it's great. And hair was, you know, the big musical. And we were all dancing naked from one time or another. And we were just having a gay old time. And I was, you know, wearing clothing that I thought was very appropriate for the times. My family lives in Atlanta, Georgia. I go home my first Christmas. And I get off the plane and, you know, and I have a coat on, can't see what I've really got on. I go home, and my mom, take my coat off, and my mom said, you're not going to wear that while you're here, are you? And I said, well, Mom, and this was a very, very powerful moment. I said, yes, I am. And her thought was, and I could see it written all over her, what will my friends think about Mary? That was the first thought. And little by little, she got used to it, but, you know, I had some really quite wonderful, outlandish things. Mm-hmm. And finally she would say, Mary, I'm sorry, you just cannot wear that tonight. We're going out to dinner with the so-and-sos. And I'd go, actually, Mom, I think I need to wear this when we go out to dinner with the so-and-sos, whatever it was. But that was just one little ring past knot that I had to encounter. The biggest one that I had, and I share it with you because it was, I believe all of us have had the same kind of energies go on in our lives, where we've been encountered in such a way that we know we have to shift a paradigm, a teaching that has come to us, which is no longer appropriate, and the teaching was in my family. I was in a group in Atlanta, Georgia, and I was given an award for being an outstanding teenager, and it was to take a trip to Washington, D.C. And I went, oh, this is going to be fantastic. I just can't wait. So I got on the train, and, you know, all these young teenagers who had been chosen from the city of Atlanta were all going to go there together. And so we did, and we had a marvelous time. And we came back, and I got off the train, and there was no one there to meet me. And I went, oh, this is very curious. I thought my parents would be here. So I said goodbye to my friends, and I got a taxi, and I went home, and there wasn't anybody to greet me at the door. And I went in, and my father said, come into my study. I went, ooh, went into his study. And he said, you do realize that you were traveling with Negro girls. I said, yes. And he said, do you realize that I could be fired from my job if anyone realized that you had been traveling with Negroes? And I said, and remember, this is in the 50s now. I went, no, Dad, I didn't realize that. And I said, and these girls are my friends. We have made friends. He said, you may never see them. You may never be in public with them as long as you are in this house. And I went, whoa. I understood where that came from, but it was very painful. Years pass. There's a good ending. I go to New York, and I'm dancing with an integrated dance company. And there's a duet between a beautiful black man and myself. And my parents are going to come. It's on Broadway. My parents are going to come. And I said, okay, it'll just be what it'll be, you know? And it wasn't a terribly sexual dance. It was just a beautiful dance with two bodies doing these incredible things. But I had a little trepidation. I thought, you know, he might leave the theater for all I know, and only my mother will show up after the show. I don't know. So after the show, you know, we get out of our costumes and we get ourselves together, and I said, okay, Mary, no matter what happens, you're just going to love your dad no matter what happens. I said, okay, I can do this. So we're backstage. My mom and dad walk in, and my mom said, oh, Mary, it was wonderful. The concert was so great, and it was just, you know, she was just, and I thought, oh, she's being very lavish. I don't know what this means. It could mean that the polar opposite is just going to happen. And my father walked up to me, and he said, I just want you to know that all of you dancers are in very good physical condition. And I said, oh, Dad, thank you so much. That's such a beautiful thing to say. Thank you. And it just made my heart sing, because he could say what he could say, and he said it lovingly, and it allowed me then to just embrace the entire experience and to know what was what. Years later, before he passed, he wrote me a letter. And he said, I want you to know how difficult it was for me to say the things I said to you all those years ago. He said, I had never met a black man who was not a servant or working in the fields, because he was grew up in Alabama, rural Alabama, on a farm. And so he and the farmhands, you know, they all worked together. He said, I never met a man, a black man, who had been educated. But he said, now I have. I've met black men who are more educated than myself, who are wiser than myself, and who have lived remarkable lives. And he said, I just want to apologize to you for what I said all those years ago. So my father grew as I had grown to accept everything and to be lovingly present, because that was what I knew was my truth. And each of us face moments like that in our lives, do we not? Where this comes and we say, is this what I am to love? And the answer is yes. This is what we are to love, because we said we would. That's why we came into embodiment. This is our embodiment of really fulfilling that most extraordinary opportunity, the miraculous of every moment. Every moment. And when we live like that, what happens in our lives? Only more comes, right? More on the left and the right-hand side. More where we have to grow to embrace, and more where we get to embrace even more that which we know, you know? Where our comfort zone is, I mean, I grew up with a comfort zone that looked like this. Maybe like that, I don't know. But, you know, it's a pretty narrow comfort zone, you know? It's really strict, and it was like this. And if you varied, it was, here it is. Now, in all my life experiences, and I'm sure with every one of us, else you wouldn't be in this room, right? Your comfort zone has just, it's huge, huge. And when people say, oh, you know, this terrible thing is happening, and oh my gosh, you know, and, oh, what are we going to do? And the rending of cloth and so on and so forth. I go, wait a minute. That's not going to do any good. The only thing that's going to do any good is for us to embrace it. Embrace it. And I was sharing in one of the meetings, there has been war since I was in grammar school, starting with the Korean War. I have never known peacetime in my entire life. I'm now 70 years old. Anybody who's older than myself, you probably haven't known it either. And that's a long time to hold conflict and mayhem and, you know, brother fighting brother, because we're all one family here on the earth plane. It's huge. And yet, with every conflict, and there are many going on, big ones and little ones all the time, how we are able to open our hearts and to allow that energy of divine love to hold even that. Because we do not know the divine order of all that is unfolding. We do not know. If we were to know, we would know. But one thing we do know, that the most powerful thing on the planet is our love. Your love, 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 your love. Our love is the most powerful thing on the planet. So, if we're embracing all that is, then we're allowing for change. The definition of change that I was given is going, that change is an aspect of love. Going from the present vibration, pardon me, to a higher vibration in an upward spiraling pattern. So if all change is really about love, then how do we change to embrace that which the moment before we said, I can't embrace that. I cannot embrace that. And the vine says to me, now, why can't you embrace that? Why can't you embrace that? It's because I've limited my love. And I'm not willing to limit my love. I'm not willing to do that anymore. I was willing in the beginning because that's what I was told. But then, as I realized, there's more and 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 more. And it only awaits our love. So if all of us in this room, we said, okay, every day, even if you just spend, I don't know, what would be good? 30 seconds. You know, if you just need to be that short, you can do 30 seconds. Or you can say, I'm going to do it for as long as my eyes are open. And then when I close my eyes and go to sleep, you can just make the call. That's my languaging, but you can just say within your heart, even as I sleep, the love which I am radiates forth upon the earth plane. And wherever it is needed, that is where it will go. Simple. You got a real full day? You start in the morning? My love radiates around the earth unceasingly. And wherever it is needed, that is where it will go. And I will be one with it, whatever it is. My ego-conscious mind doesn't need to know where that is. My heart already knows where that is. And in our hearts, I mean, you see, this heart chakra here, it looks like it's really teeny-weeny, right? You know, like this, whatever size your body is, that's what it is. But actually, your heart chakra encompasses the entire universe and all the universes, if that's what you would like it to do. You just make that decision. You say, how far out does my heart chakra go? Now, if you want it to be just like this, honey, it'll stay just like that. It will not move. And it'll just love exactly what you want to love. Okay? But then if you decide that maybe that's just a little too limited, and you just want to keep going, and you just want to keep going, and you just want to keep going, then that is the experience that you will have. And it doesn't take any more energy. This takes a lot of energy. I mean, you say, I'm going to hold just this much, just this much, just this much. Forget that. If you, and you just go as far as there is to go, beyond the beyond, I say, let that energy go beyond the beyond. It will be there, and it will not contract. It will just continue to go and go and go. And if you say, it is my love that is allowing this to happen, then your love will go to the furthest reaches of all that is. When I go from form, which is this earth plane, and I go into the formless, how I go from this to the formless is in love. I cannot go into the formless with an agenda. I cannot go into the formless with anything that is less than love. Because I cannot do that. It doesn't go. The doorway does not open. And I have shared with you that individuals who have now passed from the earth plane, they said it used to be like the fire curtain in the theater, that they would have to energetically really work so hard in order to finally be able to move into the inner. Then, with years of work, it became like the heavy curtains that are in the theater. And finally, they would open and they would go through. And when I met this extraordinary woman who became my friend, she said to me, how do you do that? You just go, whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. I said, well, doesn't everybody do that? I said, I just assumed that you could just go into the formless, form the formless, just like that. She said, actually, not really. And I said, but you have prepared the way. The way has been prepared for us so that we can have the countenance of our soul be fully manifesting through us. We can feel that love 24 hours a day. And we know immediately when there is not love. Immediately. We can feel it within ourselves, can we not? Everybody nod your heads up and down. Don't you feel it immediately? There is not a pause. There is not a breath. There is not. You just know it. That's how finely tuned we are. This tuning fork that says this is love, and when it is struck with less than love, boy, do we know it immediately. Wow. I mean, that is unbelievable. That's a miracle to me. And every moment of our life, whether we're sleeping or waking, there it is. There it is. And anything that touches that tuning fork, the vibration that goes out will be love. If that is your intention. Now, let's say you have an intention of success. Or what's something else? Money. What's something else? Fame. What's something else? More? Tell me.
Cars. A new car.
A new car. Okay, what else?
Happy family.
Happy family. What else?
Relationship.
Relationship. What else?
Health.
Health. Good. What else?
Good health.
Success.
Success. What else?
Peace.
Peace.
Joy.
Joy. You name it. This tuning fork of this divine consciousness responds immediately to whatever you bring to it. Immediately. Now, often you may say that is what you want, but there's something on this side that's blocking it, like that curtain, okay? And you get to look at that and say, what is it in me that still does not want that energy to flow freely and bring to me that which I have requested? Yeah? And I cannot say to you enough that if in your heart and in your soul and in what you know to be true for you, your love, because it is the most powerful thing on the planet, will begin to radiate out in such a way that it may not be what you were expecting, but what the divine will bring unto you will be the next step in whatever it is that you have called for. Okay? I don't believe in instantaneous manifestation, even though it's possible, because we're in a time-space continuum, ladies and gentlemen. And because we have chosen to be in a time-space continuum, there will be the recognition of the desire. Then there will be the knowing to follow each and every step. Everyone says, well, I should be able to get it just like that. I said, why? Why would you expect it like that? Because in any step of manifestation, there are going to be four aspects. First, you surrender and say, I let that go. Even though I want it, I let it go. I let it go. Okay, you let it go. And then you allow for an infilling of whatever the divine is going to bring through you. You allow for that infilling. Very important to have the infilling. And then you have to have a level of integration and manifestation. So that the integration and manifestation sometimes come together, sometimes one before the other. But you are always open to, I surrender, I am infilled. And then perhaps I need to integrate what has been brought to me before the manifestation will occur. And sometimes the manifestation will occur because I'm integrating at the same time. Do you understand? Often, we don't surrender and allow what is to come in to come in. This is all within ourselves. It has nothing to do with the exterior world now, okay? It's everything to do with our interior world. And then, from that place of surrender and infilling, then we can say, now we have been infilled with a particular vibration of energy, and perhaps we need to integrate this before the manifestation. Or we may say, the manifesting is occurring, and I need to be integrating it as I am going through the process. Okay? It's very important that we're very clear around what it is that we want. And if it's the physicality that we're working with, then we have to look at how we hold that. Do we hold it in abundance, or do we hold that in poverty consciousness? I grew up with poverty consciousness. Both my mother and my father lived through the Depression. Right? And they lived through that, and I'm telling you, we took those little pennies and we just hung on to them just as hard as we could. Yeah? The only money we ever received, we had to work for. We all had jobs, didn't do your job, didn't get your money. Okay? So here I am, 6 years old, and they said, what are we going to do about Mary? So what they figured out that I really liked to do was paint. So they gave me a bucket of paint, and they gave me a paintbrush, and they sent me down to the basement, and they said, just paint. And so I would just paint. And then I'd get my 5 cents. Okay? And then the next day, they get a little stepladder and they say, okay, paint, get you 5 cents. You understand? You know, I grew up with this poverty consciousness that if you didn't work hard and money was scarce and it was, it took me years to let go of it. But I had to do the first of those steps, and that was to surrender, to say, I have poverty consciousness and I want to surrender this poverty consciousness. And then I allowed the infilling to come, which was, this was a lesson that you needed to have early in this embodiment. It too is in divine order. Allow yourself to love your poverty consciousness. Now this was huge. To love my poverty consciousness? Get out of here. You gotta be kidding me. I don't want to do that. Yes. So I wrapped my love around that poverty consciousness. And I saw that I had poverty consciousness around love, around hope, around joy, around peace, around consciousness, around friendship, around everything. I had poverty consciousness. It had just, like a virus, it had just gone into every aspect of my life. And I went, whoa, I've got a lot of work to do. And in that realization, then I said, okay, this was the infilling that I needed. And now, as I just surrender, not all at once, but just the places that I know where I can let go of that poverty consciousness and see what is its polar opposite. Since we come to learn through polarities, what is the polar opposite? If I'm not in poverty consciousness, then can I trust? It's very important. Can I trust the flow of that which will come to me? Do I trust that? And what if it isn't exactly what I want it to look like? Well, on you, I want it exactly the way I want it. And the divine said, no, darling. That which comes will be that which will give you the greatest growth. Oh, I said, oh, I got to grow. Yikes. It is I who have to change in order that the poverty consciousness be released. I thought I could just do it out here somewhere, right? But no. It was right in here all the time. So I said, okay, I'll change. All right, so here's the infilling, and here's the surrender. And then, oh, yeah, I see I've got to integrate a whole lot of new energies before I can see what that manifestation is going to be. Hmm? And sometimes I would see that I withhold, and I still do. It's just, oh, I just have to really work on the not withholding. It's very, it just sneaks up on me and bites me on the rump and says, oh, I'm here again. I went, oh, but that's all right. I go, come on over here so I can love you. You know, this is a part of me I haven't quite loved yet that came from that very narrow, constricted aspect of energy. Now, we all have those elements within us, do we not? We all do. And the beauty is that our love has the capacity to enfold that. And then whatever the teaching is that we are to receive and whatever the change is that we're to make within ourselves, it will be done from love, in love, through love, and it will manifest in a way that is love. And it will be materialized to the extent that we need it materialized. So someone said a car. Okay, I have no idea how to manifest a car. Haven't got a clue as to how to do that. And yet, because I don't have a clue, I've just said, well, if I don't have a car, I'll walk. I mean, I made up my mind a long time ago. I said, if I need to walk from here to there, I can do that. Because in myself, I knew that it wasn't really about the car. It was really about how I could grow to hold all potentialities and possibilities and not limit myself or who I am in any way. That I could take every ring pass knot and just throw it out the window and say, wait a minute, I really want another experience. And the more we awaken, the more expanded we become, do we not? Now, when someone would say to me, you just have to expand your consciousness, I'd go, now how do I do that? Wait. There's got to be a way. How do I do that? Well, the first thing the divine showed me was a rubber band. The divine said, take this rubber band, stretch it. Okay. And you've just expanded that rubber band, haven't you? All right. Now, if you let go, the rubber band goes, boing. Okay. The divine said, here's your rubber band. Now, when you're expanding consciousness, when you let go, it stays right there. You've expanded it that much. Then the next time you say, I'd like to expand my consciousness more about whatever it is, and you do. Now, it takes practice, and then you let go. And there it is. Until the continuum of your consciousness is in the eternal, if that's what you choose. But if you want to be just like right this much, if you say, this is where I'm comfortable, no problem. You'll stay just like that for the rest of the embodiment if you want. Or maybe something happens and you get a wake-up call. You go, whoops, that was a wake-up call. Well, I guess maybe I need to go a little bit further. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it'll just stay like that until you're ready. Now, I happen to be a quadruple Scorpio, so please do not tell me this is only as far as I can go. No, 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 no. I want to keep on going. I want to keep on expanding and keep on expanding. And I want to be able to experience the totality of humanity and the totality of divinity and how they work together on the earth plane. This, to me, is a lifelong study. It is a lifelong energy field. It is a lifelong preparation for whatever is coming. And whatever that is, we're all ready. There's not a person in this room who's not ready for whatever's going to happen on this earth plane for as long as we're here. And then when we all are on the other side, we'll all be sitting around together, some in, you know, room kind of like this, but it'll be so beautiful. And we're all going to be saying, wow, what about this embodiment we just had? Far out. And do you remember when we did blah, 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 and da-da-da-da-da, and do-do-do-do-do, and we're all just going to be laughing, and people are going to say, you couldn't have had embodiments like that, because they're going to be moaning and groaning over in the corner. We're going to say, no, 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 no. This time we said, we're going to go as far as we can go, and wherever that is, who knows what that is? And when I read about all these great swamis and the awakened ones and all they're fabulous, and I go, yeah, but we're here right now, and we're doing it right now, and it just looks like this. It looked like that for them, and it's this for us. You know, there isn't a person in this room who isn't awake. You couldn't be in this room if you were asleep. You couldn't even find this room. You couldn't even get in your car. You wouldn't know where this room was. It would be a mystery. And if you said to somebody, I go to this room, and all of us sit together, and they go, oh, I don't want to do that. No, 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 no. Understand that when we're together, it doesn't make any difference. We could just sit here and be quiet, but that might just get a little boring. It would for me. So I just am here to talk about truths that I know are truths. And what happens is that your souls and my soul, they all get together and they're laughing and singing. They're having a party in the formless, okay? And we happen to be here enjoying each other's company, enjoying being, it's a very important word, enjoying being together, okay? Now, we could just sit here and we could raise vibration and not say a word. But if we sit here and I'm speaking, and it's not about my words, you do understand that. I'm just saying that to entertain your left brain. What's really going on is, as I'm speaking, the vibration is raising, and the energy that is emanating from our souls in each one of our bodies is just going. And we're sort of like, I want to say atomic fusion, because the actual atomic level of energy in every one of the cells of our body is getting revved up while we're sitting in this room. Now, you may not be able to feel it. I feel it because I have the heat. I get very hot when I work in the energy. So the heat tells me what's happening in my physical body. And while you're sitting here, this energy is vibrating, and your cells, which are vibrating at a particular rate, that consciousness of that vibration is in every single cell, because all the cells are communicating with each other all the time, magnificently. And the energy that's coming off of our bodies while we're sitting here is amazing. I mean, I have the sight to see, it. And there is a radiance of energy that's coming off of all of our bodies, you know. We could just do nothing and it would still happen if that was our intention. Our intention was to come into the room. And the moment you set that intention, what happens? The energy is already in this room before we get here. So I come early and, you know, we do all the doo-da-day, we set up the chairs and la-di-da-di-da and so on and so forth. But what we're really doing, it just looks like we're doing that, but what we're doing is amplifying the consciousness and the energy of that consciousness within the room. Now, it only takes two people to make the energy go like... And most of us have the capacity to do it all by ourselves, but it's so much more fun to do it when there are other people around, right? Because then we can all enjoy the energy together. And then when we leave the room, it's like... Now, if you don't feel that, that's perfectly all right. Keep coming. And you will. It's guaranteed. It will happen. And your dream life will start to change if you dream. And if you're a conscious dreamer, your conscious dreaming will change. And if you are in relationship with someone, the relationship will change. If you want relationship, it will come to you in a very different form than what you expect. So expect the unexpected. Okay? And when you are moving through this world, if you move through the world and your energy is to say, I am going to be lovingly present no matter what it looks like out there or inside myself, I will be lovingly present to every person no matter what. And if we do that, then what will happen just in our lives, our little wonderful embodiments, just our own lives, it will be unbelievable. But we have to be aware of every moment because it will come moment to moment to moment. I say, don't hit me with a baseball bat to get my attention. Just gently tap me. Because the divine will gently tap you if you ask. And then that will be the attention getter. Some people need a little shake. Some people need a real... Yeah? But all of us in this room, we have said, just this will be enough. And we will pay attention. Because we want to be present in every moment, no matter what it looks like out there. And that's very important because we say no matter what. And the divine will bring you that. The no matter what's will come. And we will be ready. Because our practice is right here. This is where we strengthen ourselves. This is where we align ourselves. This is how we go forth into the world. And we say, I too am one with all that is. So how does that feel? All righty. So let us now sit in the silence. We're on?
We're on.
Okay. I'd like to make the calls. I call now for the light of the divine to create a perfect circle of love, light, peace, and joy around all who are present here in the physical and also on the inner planes. I wish to acknowledge and give thanks for all souls who gather to be with us, whether in or out of embodiment, and for the radiance in which we find ourselves. Thank you. I call now for the infilling and indwelling of the divine within all of our bodies, planes, and cells. I acknowledge and give thanks for this and for the divine consciousness that is available to us 24 hours a day unceasingly. Thank you. I call now that we enter into the serene center of our being within our hearts, and there we enter the silence, allowing ourselves to fall more deeply still in love with the divine which we are. Thank you. And I open my heart, and I bring you Gaia, beloved Mother Earth, into my heart. Thank you, Gaia, for the exquisite manifestation of divine love which is expressing in you, through you, and as you. Thank you, Mother, for loving us and nurturing us through each and every one of our embodiments. Thank you, Mother. I love you. And I open my heart, and I bring you, beloved elementals of earth, air, fire, and water, into my heart. Thank you, beloved elementals. Thank you for your union and communion with Mother Earth and your union and communion within every cell of our physical body. Thank you for the exquisite manifestation of divine love which is expressing in you, through you, and as you. Thank you. Thank you. I love you. And I open my heart and I bring the whole of humanity into my heart. Thank you, beloved souls. All souls who are in the embodiment now, thank you. I love you. All souls who are leaving the embodiment now, thank you. I love you. And all souls who are coming into the embodiment now, thank you. I love you. And to my soul, thank you. I love you. Thank you, dear beloved souls, for the exquisite manifestation of divine love which is expressing in you, through you, and as you. Thank you, dear ones. I love you. And I acknowledge and give thanks for the ever-expanding consciousness which we are. For the miracle that is our consciousness. For the miracle which is our soul. For the miracle which is this embodiment. And for the miracle of our love that holds everything within it. Thank you.